Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in construction, real estate, and development? We pull back the curtain on the new home construction industry, the real estate market, and the trends shaping it all. Discover the stories, insights, and expertise behind the process of building a new home. Join us for Trust the Process podcast, and let's build something great together. Welcome back to Trust the Process, podcast where we talk about the real estate industry, new home construction, the housing industry, and everything in between. Today, our in-between is going to take us to a term you may or may not have heard, a McMansion.
You have to say with that twang.
A funny term.
Yeah.
So this was recently introduced to me, something I hadn't heard referred in this way. So yeah. Although I know what it is, once explained to me, the term itself maybe didn't ever cross my path.
So a McMansion is just an informal term that was coined kind of in the late 90s, early 2000s to describe the rise of large suburban homes. It's now become a pejorative. It has pejorative connotations because there's been a lot of bad players that built a lot of bad McMansions. So I think it always had a negative tilt, and there's a certain fast food company that it's named after, and the thought was that that's mass produced, low quality, and big portions, right? So that's kind of, I'm not going to say what company that they're named after, that McMansion named after.
Nobody could guess what that is.
So it was kind of coined in that way. And if you look at the average home size in the late 70s and early 80s, started to really swell. And I think it was around 1,300 or 1,400 in the 60s and 70s. And then by the 80s, it was getting over 2,000. Mm-hmm. And I think now it kind of hit a stable point around the 90s, and now it's around 2200, and it's kind of stayed there. It bounces between 22 and 2400. Still a really large home if you think about how big a 22 or 2300 square foot home is, considering that that's the average. So there's a lot of homes that are a lot bigger than that. And to think about the amount of homes, there's so many homes that are probably, you know, smaller. Your averages are thrown. You've got to have a lot of 7,000-8,000 square foot homes, 6,000 square foot homes.
That's true to make that
average. There's so many 1,200 square foot homes out there. And then also there's two ways to look at it. What's this average square footage of a newly built home? That number always skews larger than the average home in America is X number of square feet, because you're factoring in all the homes built in the 40s and 50s that are still standing that are 980 square feet.
Yeah, and different areas.
Different areas have different home sizes. I mean, definitely as we've gone west and in the Sun Belt, where the areas are newer, everything gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm passionate about these because, number one, I don't think all McMansions are bad. I think that McMansions are kind of part of the American dream. If they weren't, they would have gone away by now. There's obviously a demand for them. But I wanted to first kind of define what the conventional wisdom of a McMansion is. It's usually bigger than 3,000 square feet, oftentimes has a three-car garage. It's almost always in suburbia, so it's generally built in the neighborhood of other exact copies or similar homes. And then the death knell for most architects is that they don't have a lot of architectural integrity. So it's kind of in the 90s, we had an architectural style that was, or kind of a word for a style that was coined, transitional. So transitional architecture is going to, you know, kind of pull from a lot of components. And in the 90s and kind of during the rise of the McMansion, the Palladian style architecture. So think early Monticello and those kind of homes with the Palladian windows, which is just an arched window with grids in it, a lot of brick, a lot of big grand entryways, a lot of double doors. So they were kind of these mini manors. And that was the architectural style back then. And as everything goes, a lot of builders are not versed in architectural style, so they're doing copycat. Me too. Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that arched window. If I do this on a 3,000 square foot home and make it have a three-car garage and have a formal living area and big columns. So it kind of got stuck in that style. So when you think of a McMansion, generally for me, and I think a lot of people that are familiar with the term, they're probably thinking of that late 80s or into the 90s, big suburban house, brick, arched windows, big columns on the inside, kind of maybe one side is brick, the rest is vinyl siding, just not a lot of architectural integrity. But I would argue that
it looks really fancy, but
it
isn't
looks
actually
fancy, but it's not fancy. Okay. And unfortunately, before we had such rigorous codes, they had reputations of being really poorly built, thrown up really quickly, not good with energy efficiency, volume ceilings, maybe just insulation built to code, whatever the code was at that time, cheap windows. So they just had this, they have this perception that they're cheap to build. They deliver a lot of value, but they're expensive to maintain. So, and a lot of that holds true. And out west, that style, we have a lot of them here in Las Vegas, and that's, we got stuck with the Mediterranean style, became our McMansion. So you see a lot of turrets, a lot of fake stone, a lot of clay tile roofs and things like that that are kind of symbolic of a west of the Mississippi McMansion. But again, we're seeing modern McMansions now. So what's popular now is, at least in a lot of the West, is a desert contemporary or modern architectural style, linear flat roofs.
Flat roof.
And it's a bastardization of what modern architecture is, which is taking advantage, especially desert contemporary, it's taking advantage of where the sun is. You're hiding from the sun with desert contemporary architecture because sun is plentiful, whereas back east, maybe you'd be trying to capture the sun. But it takes these fundamental elements of architecture and reduces them down and then spoon feeds it to the masses. So that's the bad. That is McMansions behaving badly. Where I think that McMansions make a lot of sense are, does provide a lot of flexibility. Kids generally moving out later in life, maybe family, moms are moving back in, dads are moving back in, aunts and uncles. It allows, the square footage allows for a lot of doubling up of residences, which happens as cities become more developed and get more expensive, and as the country things get more expensive. So I like the functionality that they have. And then selfishly, as a builder, generally what you're building and what you're selling is square footage, unfortunately. When we list one of our spec homes and I see that Z estimate pop up, the algorithms are using your zip code, year built, and square footage. Because how come we can have our Brielle model at 3,800 and our Messina model at 4,200? Zillow doesn't know that they're on one has a better lot than the other, but the Messina one has a higher Z estimate because it's 4,300 versus 3,800. Mm-hmm. For what reason? It shows you that square footage sells. So as a builder, you can either choose to die on that hill or build and get on the McMansion train. But again, I don't think it necessarily always has to be a bad thing.
So kind they were doing happened. Cookie cutter production.
Yeah, hey, people like Palladian architecture. Let's do everything in Palladian. A lot of Dallas and Houston have a lot of Palladian architecture. High roof pitches, arched windows, and brick facades. So it's not always a bad thing, but ultimately builders are capitalists, so they're going to build what sells if that style is trendy now. We're seeing it play out with our modern architecture go all up and down the suburbs of Las Vegas and Phoenix. A lot of modern architecture, and it's not. You can't lop the roof off of a house, take away any architectural embellishment, and call it modern architecture. That's not. You could argue that's minimalist architecture, but that's not modern architecture. And they're selling it in such a way and taking advantage of maybe less informed or less sophisticated buyers. I don't mean that in a negative light. They're just not house nerds like I am, which is fine. I mean, but I hate to see that happening. So if you look at a lot of what we build, I try to either, if I can't be true to an architectural style, we'll at least be minimal with our style. I don't mean minimalist, but just say avoid the hallmarks of today's trends because these homes are not going to age well with all those hallmarks. To say, you look at a lot of Southern California, Phoenix, and Las Vegas, what style do you see in the late 80s and early 90s? A lot of that salt box, white shades of white stucco with window embellishment, and you can spot a 1989 built home in the West with very little architectural knowledge. You can kind of tell where it was built. So I think there's a blend, and I think that McMansions are just the nature of when you suburbanize and when you're trying to spread out all that infrastructure and all those costs over 100 homes. The bigger and the more expensive the homes are, the more those costs are minimized. So I think it's just the economics of home building. So I'm passionate about the topic. I look at McMansions with scrutiny. You know, I'm definitely very critical. A lot of McMansions in my own neighborhood. And it's okay though. They're still homes. And this connotation that because they're built fast or because they're built in a certain era, it doesn't always mean they're built poorly. So those factors, you know, in the 80s when builders corporatized and you had a lot of production builders kind of coming into into the marketplace and going public, and there was really not a corporate builder before the 80s. It was kind of an 80s and 90s invention that has we still live with to this mm-hmm. day, and I think that kind of allowed those that shareholder-driven mentality has made McMansion. Then there's some other innovations in engineering that has allowed the McMansion. The truss, which we've talked mm-hmm. about in the past, the truss plate, just allowed for greater spans. It allowed us to build bigger homes and actually our cost per square when adjusted for inflation and back out mm-hmm. certain things that are affected in new home legislation and things like mm-hmm. that. But overall, we were able to build a lot larger spaces a lot more effectively and efficiently, which has brought the cost down.
And so categorically, it's a home that is larger square footage with very little substance beyond that.
Kind of. It's all sizzle, no steak.
Okay.
But generally, it's funny. It's funny that you that when we try to put a pin on it, because it evades you. Because one of the hallmarks are a lot of cheap embellishments, a lot of cornice details that are made of styrofoam instead of wood. They are mm-hmm. meant to look hand-carved. It's kind of imitation. So it's not necessarily always that they lack the embellishments and they lack the substance, because many times they do. It's just the materials that are in them that are making them try to appear to be a manor. Mm-hmm. You know, a lord and a lady live there. Yeah. When really it's a CPA and an RN. that's those materials are cheap knockoffs mm-hmm. of what it's emulating. But I argue that why does crown molding that you'll never touch or even be able to reach, why does it need to be solid wood? Why can't that be MDF? A lightweight material, easy to work with, doesn't require all the logging and all the other issues that came along with those heavy molding and built out of hardwood. Why is that just not the progression of home building? Those materials are most likely, now some of them are more moisture, you know, sensitive sure. than others. MDF will literally swallow up like a sponge. But does it get the job done? Does it give you that look and feel? Does it make you feel warm when you come home? Does it really matter if your crown molding is solid oak, painted white, or stained versus MDF, which was spit out of sawdust? I'm not too cynical on McMansions, but I, you know, like I said, I always look at them with scrutiny.
For them, I mean, there, it's a subcategory of something. Did it just not
I think
exist,
it started
or
as
how else do people call it?
Boxes, okay. And then it began.
I don't know.
No, I don't think it had. I think it started with a natural progression, right? This builders in the 40s and 50s went from building row houses, townhouses in cities to the invention of the suburb, and the first suburbs, Levittown, all those places in the northeastern seaboard, were small, basically apartments that weren't attached. If you look at those homes, I think it was like a Ranger model or something. He had three different models, and he built about hundreds of thousands of them in the East Coast. And they were, I think the biggest they got was 1,200 square feet. So they were taking these apartments and saying, well, obviously, we've been used to living in 900 square feet anyway, but now you have a yard. Now mm-hmm. you can grill. Now you can do these things. So, like anything, it had to become a status symbol. Oh, well, we all live in a suburb. Well, how do we design yeah. status? Oh, well, we want a bigger home in the suburb. So mm-hmm. they just started to grow, and there's more margin in building larger homes, and builders favor those things. And I think it just slowly progressed, and McMansion is a way to retrospectively look back at a style, and we still do it today, but it's a way to look back and say, oh, those are McMansions. So, yeah, I don't think it grew out of anything except just what are we going to call these things? And and like we mentioned it a little bit ago, and you had never heard the term, and you've been in this industry for a yeah. long time, and you're an architectural enthusiast, and you're a design enthusiast, and you never come across it. So
yeah.
I think it's just kind of it's a vernacular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now I know. Thank
you
for informing me.
Now you know.
Appreciate it. And thank you for joining us on this episode of Trust the Process podcast. We look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning into the Trust the Process podcast. Make sure to follow us on Spotify to stay in the loop with the latest insights, project updates, and everything in between. See you next time.